Good afternoon and welcome to Our Savior's Online Radio Show. I'm Pastor Eric Jelinek. Great to be with you once again. Today we have with us our intern Jeremy once again. Good afternoon, Jeremy.
Hello, good afternoon. Good to be here.
So Pastor Jennifer is off this week, so it is the two of us. It turns out Chrissy is gone too, so we've got John working with us once again, which is great to have him back, which means the guys are ruling the roost. This is always a good thing.
Everything is right in the world.
All we need is a little bit of bacon here, and we would be doing great today. So today we're going to be making a move. We've been working our way through the Old Testament up to this point. If you remember last week, we had just finished with the Babylonian captivity, and we went back with Ezra and Nehemiah to the start of the rebuilding of the temple and the walls in Jerusalem, and so all of the people were starting to return. So the rest of the Old Testament deals with some of that returning, and what we're going to do today is we're going to start moving into the New Testament, which means that we're going to start talking about Jesus. What we're going to be looking at in broad strokes is going to be the first three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. A little bit of John will be tied in there. Well, these are the stories that we have of Jesus, and Matthew, Mark, and Luke have a lot of similarities, and so a lot of that is we're going to be covering. We're not going to go through one book in particular, but we're going to look through all of them. So that's what we're going to be looking at. Anything you want to say before we start diving in here?
Well, I guess those three books, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they're the synoptic gospels, and that's why we'll take a look at those. They have so many similarities compared to the Gospel of John. So
I always like the synoptics. My favorite of all of them is Mark. It's the oldest of them, and so I like spending time with that one. It's also one of the shortest. So
it is my favorite as well, typically, partly because of the shortness that you could sit down and read a gospel in a very short time. It's a good one to start with.
It's actually one of those things that for our confirmation students, every other year during Lent, we have them read through the Gospel of Mark so they get read through an entire gospel and see all those stories themselves. So we're actually going to be talking about that next week with them when they come back to confirmation. So, but we're going to start today in Matthew. And we're going to start with something that is not necessarily the most scintillating of all of the gospel stories, but it's something that's important. Matthew 1 is the genealogy of Jesus. Now, to just sit down and read through this, like I said, it's not that exciting of stuff. It's a record of the ancestors of Jesus Christ, as it states at the very beginning. And it starts with Abraham. And what happens in this first chapter is it works its way line by line, person by person, all the way down to Joseph, through Jesse, down to King David, Solomon, all the way down to the birth of Jesus. The importance of this is to show that historic line between Jesus and all of these ancestors that were so important and that were chosen by God to do some absolutely amazing things. A couple of the things you'll see also is the vast majority of people that are listed here are men. But there are a few women, and we've covered some of them as we've gone through this. The women might have a bit of a history. They're not exactly the saintliest of people, but they're also some who had some of the greatest impact on a lot of people. You hear about Tamar. Pastor Jennifer told that story a while back. You hear about Rahab, who hid the spies. You hear about Ruth. We know that story. We spent quite a bit of time with that one as well. You get the wife of Uriah, who is Bathsheba. So all of these are the women that are named. And for me, one of the significant parts here is you start to see that God is choosing to work through a wide variety of people as you go through this entire genealogy. He didn't pick just the best of the best. He didn't pick just these people that he thought were so astronomically good, but rather he picked normal, everyday people. People who made mistakes. People who sometimes used trickery and deceit. People who made a difference in the lives of others as they worked their way through their life. So that's one of the reasons why I think that the genealogy is so important, and to have it as our starting point, this is where Jesus came from. This is his roots. This is basically his lifeblood.
It is quite the list, because it is, I think, quite an honest list. There's nothing hidden. It's an honest list of what my history is, and I'm not ashamed of it. And we are, I think it says something about that, you know, God's love is included for many people, not just the elect, the high up kings and queens, but it's average day people, prostitutes. You know, there's a prostitute in here and in the list, and some of the men are kind of have shady pasts as well.
Some of them.
So, well, you know,
quite a few of them have shady pasts.
So I think it's a quite a telling list of history.
Right. I agree. So that's how Matthew starts. And then let's jump over. You've got opened up to Luke here, a little bit of yours. And starting in Luke, you can start to see how the prediction of Jesus' birth was to come and some other things that led into it. So I'll let you go with a little bit of Luke's information here.
Well, I guess we ought to start with John the Baptist before we start with Jesus. John the Baptist, every time I think of John the Baptist, in high school I was Jesus and Godspell. And so every time I think of John the Baptist, I picture this high school girl who played the role of John the Baptist in high school, and I just picture her standing up front saying, "Prepare the way of the Lord."
Look at that. We have our intern singing on the radio and recorded for posterity's sake.
So, you know, that there is what John the Baptist came into the world for, was to prepare the way for Jesus. And oftentimes people don't realize that John the Baptist's birth is also a miraculous birth. John the Baptist's mother, Elizabeth, who is, I believe, the sister of the Virgin Mary. She was old.
Nice way of putting it. Yep.
Put it bluntly, she was old. And it was a miraculous birth. Zechariah, the father, also, he's a priest. And they didn't have much hope of having a child. And lo and behold, an angel comes and tells them, "You're going to have a child." And so it was a miraculous birth as well.
And one of the things that is also interesting with that is Zechariah, like others who have angels appear to them quite often, didn't really buy it. Mm-hmm. He thought that this just couldn't happen. He was too old. Think back to Abraham and Sarah once again on this. He thought he was too old. He didn't think it was possible. Mm-hmm. And basically said, you know what? The angel said, it's going to happen. Believe it or not, it's going to happen. In order to prove this to you, I'm going to shut you up. And I just love that. So during Elizabeth's pregnancy, Zechariah can't speak. He basically has it, so he is unable to speak at all during her entire pregnancy. I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but he is unable to speak through all of that. And even though he had been told what his son's name was going to be, he couldn't even say that. And he actually had to write it down later on so that they could see who it was going to be. But, this was one of God's way of saying, if you don't believe what I'm going to say, I'm going to demonstrate that I really am here with you. And the way I'm going to demonstrate is I'm going to shut you up. So
then we get to the annunciation of Jesus' birth. And the angel Gabriel now comes to Mary. And it says during the sixth month, so in the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy. And so John the Baptist is only 6 months older than Jesus, presumably. So and comes to Mary and greetings, says to her, "Greetings, favored one, the Lord is with you." And must have been, I don't know, I would think it would be scary to have an angel come to you and tell you the Lord is with you. And she has doubts as well. Angel tells her you're going to be with child, and she has little to no hope of, or she is a virgin. They are engaged to each other, and actually it's probably more, a little bit more than engaged, somewhere between kind of like engaged and married. They're betrothed to each other. And so the angel tells her, you're going to have a child by the work of the Holy Spirit.
Now, what I love here is the contrast that you have between Zechariah and between Mary. Because Zachariah, he's got all these doubts. And yeah, Mary has a couple too. She asks some questions.
She does that first.
But then Mary says, I'm the Lord's servant. Let it be with me just as you have said. So basically saying, here I am, Lord. What you want, I will do. She buys into it, lock, stock, and barrel. And she says, okay, I will do what God has asked me. This is the exact opposite of this older man, Zachariah, who is a priest. Here she is, a common peasant girl. He is the one with all of this education. He is the one who's in the temple. He is the one who has seen all of these great things take place in worship. She has been on the outside for so long. He is the one who has doubts and God shuts up. She is the one who has some questions but then says, I totally believe that this is going to happen. These two contrasts to me are so fun to look at when you see here are these two cousins that are coming into the world that really will change the entire world.
I think it's a shows nicely that, yeah, Mary has some questions and doubts, just like oftentimes we have questions and doubts in our mind as well. But in the end, Mary says, here I am. I am your servant, Lord. And I think, I hope, or I pray that even in my doubts and questions in my life, that I can come to that and say to God, I am your servant.
Wouldn't that be nice?
That'd be nice.
All of our questions and doubts, say, all right, God, I believe you wholeheartedly. Yeah.
That's why I say it's a prayer.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, not long after this, Mary takes off, and she goes and visits Elizabeth. And with this visit, the interesting point there is as soon as she shows up, John, who is in Elizabeth's womb at this time, starts to jump within the womb at recognition of Jesus coming, who is in the womb of Mary. So you can already see the tie that is taking place between these two. And this tie will be there. I mean, these guys are cousins. There's not much different in age. And as time goes on, you see just how important they are to one another. So that starts to happen there.
Yeah, there is a history. Oftentimes, I think, people think that when John the Baptist and Jesus meet each other in the Jordan River for Jesus' baptism, that that's the first time that they've met. But something tells me they've probably, they knew each other before then. And they recognized each other, they knew who each other were, maybe even very well.
Right.
And there's some history, even back to the womb.
Now, going back a little bit again, I'm going to jump into Matthew's gospel because not all the stories are told chronologically in all of the gospels. There's some stories that are in some and some that are in the other. And going back a little bit, it's how Joseph took all of this because you got to put yourself in Joseph's shoes as well. I mean, here he is betrothed to this woman, all of a sudden told that he's going to be a father and she's going to have a baby and it's not his. It's the Holy Spirit's instead. But he gets to raise this child as his own. You can imagine how he's got to be a little bit uncomfortable with all of this going on. And he is. I mean, they state right there that he was uncomfortable with it and he was ready to call off the engagement. But he was going to do it quietly because if he made a scene about this, basically that's it for Mary. She's done. If she was pregnant by somebody else while betrothed to Joseph, this could be terms for a stoning. So she could be taken care of that way. During this time, when he's about ready to call all of this off, the angel appears to Joseph as well. Now, this is one busy angel. He is appearing everywhere and letting people know what's going on. This time, he comes to Joseph and says, you know what? Mary told you the truth. She really is pregnant with the Holy Spirit's child. And this is his name, Jesus. This is what you will call him. And you will help to raise this child. Now, for me, there's the very important part about this is Joseph basically giving the responsibility to be God's dad. I mean, that's huge to me. Coming in and saying, you are going to teach this child what it means to live as a human. You're going to teach this child how to take his first steps. You're going to teach him how to carve wood because we know that he was a woodworker. You're going to teach him everything that needs to be taught about the law and the scriptures and this that you're supposed to pass down from generation to generation. This is your responsibility. And so huge responsibility for Joseph on that. And the neat thing about it is after this vision that he has, Joseph jumps in. And he said, all right, I will do this. I'm not going to toss her away like I had thought about doing. I'm not going to kick her out. But instead, this will be my child, and I will raise him as such.
At that point is when it's revealed that Jesus says, they shall name him Emmanuel. God is with us. And that's kind of our, kind of the incarnation of God, that God is coming into humanity to be a part of us. And I always love that image of Emmanuel, God is with us.
It's the whole thing that what we do as humans, God has done as a human as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fully human, fully divine dual aspect of Jesus, I think, is so important. I mean, Jesus got hungry. Jesus cried out in pain. Jesus probably sprained an ankle and stubbed his toe and fell down and got dirty. And all of these things that we humans do, God did as well in Jesus. And for me, that's important because it is God being with us, God experiencing what we experience. That's a very important aspect, I think, of Emmanuel.
We'll eventually get to one of his childhood stories, I would assume, but I always wish there was some more of Jesus's childhood stories, because something tells me he had some fun as a child.
I have no doubt about that. No doubt, because we have fun. That's part of, God wanted to experience all of that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So let's go on into the birth.
So census. That's the word. A census is called, and by the king, the census is called, and so everyone has to go back to their birthplace. And for Joseph, that is the city of Bethlehem, the city of David, and so they have to travel miles. They're up in by the Sea of Galilee is where their hometown is, and they have to travel down around Samaria. It's a quite the travel.
Well, luckily they had a stretch limo to take them the whole way, right?
Luckily, as the Son of God, they had that, yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so they made the long trek. All their animals, likely servants, anyone that was part of their household, made that long trek down there. And of course, it's a busy place. The inn is full. And they find themselves in a stable. Most people think of the stable as kind of a wooden structure of a barn, but it was more likely a cave that would have been below some house that was there, and then kind of this cave underneath. And
not a lot of ventilation in there?
No, probably smells pretty bad.
Lots of animals.
They probably don't clean it very often. Probably never clean it, actually. And so it's probably not a pleasant place to be born. Part of God experiencing humanity.
There you go.
Jesus is born in a stable amongst animals, manure, and in a feed trough. That's what a manger is basically a feed trough. And that's where we find Jesus being born.
Not long after he was born, the angels go out. And they draw in the first people to come and pay their honor, their respect to Jesus. Now, of course, they were going to go out and they were going to find the best of the best, because here was the Son of God coming, and you want to bring the best of the best to worship him, right? Wrong. That's not what God was doing. Instead, what God went out to do is he found the shepherds. Now, the shepherds were outcasts. They were outsiders. They were by themselves most of the time. They didn't take a shower very often. They probably smelled about as bad as that barn did as well. But they were there. They were these outsiders. And God went to them and said, all right, time for you to come in. I want you to see what has just happened, because God has come to you as one of you. So they came and they worshiped when they saw that what had been told them by the angels was true. Here was God in the form of this little baby wrapped up in swaddling clothes found in a manger. And they went off rejoicing about finding this. The next visitors that come that we hear about are, were you going with the Magi?
Sure.
Go for it.
Oh, I can.
Yeah.
The Magi, the Wise Men, We Three Kings, they get a lot of names. Essentially, they were likely some very smart people that studied stars. Because they noticed a star.
Yep.
And followed this star. They follow it for days, probably weeks, for a very long time. And it's actually, I believe we celebrate it 7 days after Jesus' birth. And that the Magi make 12. It to the 12 days. Thank you. 12 days afterwards. They actually come to King Herod to ask King Herod, do you know of this child that we've come to see, that we've seen a star in the sky?
And it makes sense that they would go to the king.
Yes.
Because they are looking for
a king.
Yeah.
This frightens King Herod. He doesn't want to hear about a potential another king that is in the area. So the King Herod tells the Magi to go and search for this child, follow the star, search for this child, and then send me word so that I can also come and pay homage.
Liar.
He's a liar, yes. Yes, he's not a good man. Essentially, what he wants to do is find this child and kill this child because it's seen as a threat by King Herod and doesn't want anything to do with this, with Jesus. So the wise men do go and find Jesus. They pay homage to him, bring gold, frankincense, and myrrh, which are some somewhat strange things to bring. But they do have some meaning. Yeah, I think you know the meaning a little bit more, don't you?
Well, when you look at gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and the other thing that happens with this as well is this wasn't right after Jesus' birth. This was probably a couple years later.
Right.
It took a while for this to happen. And so they show up and they have these gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Gold, it's a gift for royalty. And so that is one of those great gifts that is given to those who are royalty. Frankincense and myrrh, though, those are a little different because here was different items that were used for burial. Frankincense and myrrh, what the body would be covered in when you were burying somebody. And so basically, they're bringing in this honor gift of gold, and they're also bringing in items that are already predicting the death of Jesus. And as Jesus' mom, I'd probably be a little bit freaked out, not only that three strangers from another country have shown up, but also that they're bringing these gifts that, you know, they have some major significance behind them as well. But again, Mary accepts them because she's got this feeling as to what will happen with Jesus. Mm-hmm. So
these Magi then, they go and visit Jesus, and in a dream then, though, they are told not to return to King Herod to tell King Herod of Jesus's birth and location and everything. And so they instead head back to their own country by another road to escape and get away from King Herod because, you know, bad things happen with King Herod. And so here we have the shepherds who, you know, outcasts, not good people, local people. We also have the Magi who are from another part of the world. And so it kind of is this expanse of people that are expecting, that are looking for the Messiah. It kind of opens our perspective of who Jesus comes into the world for.
Yeah, he didn't come just for the insiders. He didn't come just for the chosen Israelites. But we can see that this is expanding out to the entire world. Mm-hmm. Christ came for all. And then after that, after the Magi took off, another vision came, and it was to Joseph this time, and God basically said, you know, you got to get out of here. There could be some problems because Herod, he's not real comfortable with you around. He still thinks that Jesus is going to cause him a lot of problems, so it's time for you to escape to Egypt. Now, they had been in Egypt before as slaves. This time they are going, and they're going by their own choice, but they are going so that they can get away, and they did. They escaped there, and they stayed there until Herod died. And this was a very positive thing because it did save Jesus' life, because after that, one of the most uncomfortable passages that comes up for me in Matthew's gospel, something that I really don't like at all, but it also comes up in our preaching about every 3 years. It's what we call the martyr of the innocents. Because basically what happened at this point is Herod said, you know what? We don't know where the Magi went. We don't know who this boy is. But what we know is that He's probably about 2 years old or younger. And so what we have to do in order to secure my sovereignty, to make sure that this child will not raise up any problems for me when I am king, is every male 2 years and younger is to be killed. And so that's what happened. They went out and they slaughtered every male child 2 years and younger. It's, for me, what I see with this passage is the total depravity of humanity when it comes to want to hold on to power, where we put power above people. And that's exactly what Herod was doing here. He was putting power, his desire to have power over people and destroying innocent children and destroying families as a whole as well. After that, King Herod passed away, and an angel came to Joseph and said, "It's safe for you to return, so go ahead and do so." So Joseph loaded everybody up, and up they went, up into Galilee to a city that was called Nazareth, and that is where they settled in, was in Nazareth. So that takes us up to about the third chapter of Matthew. We're talking about next week, we'll come back to this again, and we'll start diving into John the Baptist's ministry and a little bit further as to what happens with Jesus after a baptism and so forth. But that's about where we're going to be going next week. So anything you want to add on here?
I don't think so.
All right.
Good to be with you.
You bet. We'll have you back again.
Maybe I'll sing again next time.
Hey, I'm looking forward to that. We can have you and Pastor Jennifer do a duet. That would be great.
Okay, I hope I have a small part in that.
Well, you know, if we do a duet with you and Pastor Jennifer, I'm turning your mic off.
Ah!
Having said that, thank you, everybody. I hope you have a blessed day.